He started tasting this metallic taste in his mouth, and he started this burning sensation. And by that afternoon, on July 27, and possible rash, he was taken to the hospital.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today is the 29th of February, 2016, and you're tuned into The Corbett Report, where we are discussing, well, we're going to discuss a very interesting subject that I haven't broached yet, but in order to do that, we're going to bring in a couple of investigative journalists who have been working on this story busily behind the scenes and in front of the scenes a little bit. If you've been following the coverage at BoilingFrogsPost.com, for example, where you will have seen the recent article, Obama Set to Settle Score Against Oregon Sheriff Outspoken on the Second Amendment, talking about Sheriff Glenn Palmer and the way that he is being targeted in the wake of the recent Oregon standoff. And another person who has been working on this with Sibel has been Spiro Skouras, who has been doing some video reports on the subject. And there is also a video interview with Sheriff Mack that Sibel conducted a while ago with Spiro. So all of those links will be in the show notes for today's episode. But obviously, you're going to want to know a little bit more about this story. Who is Sheriff Palmer? Why is he being targeted? What is going on here? So let's bring them on board. Sibel, Spiro, thank you for joining us today. And let's start with Sibel. Sibel, perhaps you can give us the overview of this story and what this is all about.
Sure. Sheriff Palmer, he's a sheriff in a county in eastern Oregon, and it's Grant County, and it includes John Day. He became a public figure in 2013. This is right after the infamous Sandy Hook incident and the shootings. And this is when the Obama administration went into the full mode of lobbying to use the event as a pretext and context to bring about his own legacy, which is restriction of the Second Amendment. Now, I'm not saying all of them are bad, but a lot of them really contradict Second Amendment, and they're in direct conflict with the Second Amendment rights provided. And when they were provided, they were really provided under these unconditional kind of ways, and as part of our Bill of Rights. So when he started this intense campaign, Obama administration, many sheriffs in the country, across the country, they raised objections. But it started with a few handful of sheriffs who were very brave and quick to step up and say, hold on a second, this is wrong. I mean, you're looking at it wrong in several layers. One is, first of all, it's the Second Amendment. And the second one is the separation between the state and the federal government. And but Sheriff Palmer was one of those sheriffs out there in Oregon. In fact, we have had several sheriffs in Oregon who were first to step up. And you know how hard it is. The same thing with whistleblowers or any case. Once you get the first few brave ones who dare and they come forward and publicly do something, then hooray, you get to have other people. Well, once he did that and several other sheriffs, then they collected 435 sheriffs across the nation, and they unanimously came out and said, you know what, as a president, first of all, you can't do this. And if you decide to do it, or if you attempt to do it, we are going to challenge you. We are not, as the sheriffs of our local area, and we have the consent, we have the vote of the local population, okay? And again, our country was supposed to be set up based on this many separations, you know, federal and state and then down to the local level, so that you won't have this tyranny of one layer in the top. And they got media coverage, and this really, really pissed off the Obama administration. And to a large degree, even the main administration here, state administration in Oregon, because Oregon is pretty polarized and divided. I mean, you look at this Cascade Mountains that go down, right? And you look at the west side, you know, you look at Portland and Salem, Eugene, the university city, and you're looking at mainly Democrats, liberal point of views. And again, here I'm not attacked to any views. I'm just talking about the divide. You come to the eastern portion of Oregon, you're looking at more conservative people. You know, you're looking at ranchers. You have people who have been working in the timber industry, and they have more of the western frontier mentality of they want to have independence, and they do have their own issues that none of the federal stuff would really apply, okay? These are pockets that have existed here in this country for a long, long time. So the administrations, the state government, they were not pleased with this either. And it got to a point where Sheriff Palmer even testified in Congress, et cetera, et cetera. Now you fast forward that. In 2015, July, 23 sheriff's offices, they get these threatening letter, and FBI is notified. Okay, and Sheriff Palmer is one of the 23 sheriff's offices who received this letter. On July 27th, they received it. The letters were sent on July 25th in 2015. And so they are notified because there is this chemical or biological possibility, attack possibilities. And in fact, three of the sheriffs who received it supposedly had some physical reaction to that. The strongest reaction, physical reaction, came from Sheriff Palmer. He started tasting this metallic taste in his mouth, and he started this burning sensation. And by that afternoon, on July 27, and possible rash, he was taken to the hospital. People with hazmat suits, they came and they treated him and tested him. Okay, so there was this 48 hours window where the case received intense media coverage. Even Russia Today covered it, AP covered it, and of course, around-the-clock coverage by the media here in Oregon and even local media stations. And then, poof, the case went away. It disappeared. With a lot of questions there, remaining there. In fact, none of those questions were asked by the members of the media. Whether local media, state-level media, or the national media. For example, there was this blurry coverage of who had the chain of custody with these letters. So 23 letters, 27th, the officers start receiving this. Did it go to the state officials or did it go to the FBI? Initially, they said FBI. Spokesperson said the FBI is handling it. They are working it with the local and the state officials, but they are handling the examination. Now, some tests were performed, the field test on this envelope to see whether they had anything toxic in it. But field tests are very, very limited. There's only so much you can do. For example, if you're suspicious of anthrax or similar kind of biochemical laced envelopes, usually you have to send these to level 4 labs, okay? For example, Oregon doesn't have level 4 labs, so it has to go to the nearest state where they have level 4 labs, and it takes 5 to 7 days to examine, to forensically test the envelopes and determine and rule out everything, whether it was this or that. Well, this didn't happen. These letters were received on the 27th, and that same day, the FBI said there is nothing in these letters. Well, we have incidents of some of these sheriffs going to hospital, at least one of them having a strong reaction. And after the 28th, other than saying they had a suspect in custody only for a few hours, and they released this individual's name, and supposedly he's from Eugene, Oregon, Lance Storm, they said that they released him and that they know that he did it, okay? And no charges were brought neither by the federal government, and in this case, both U.S. Postal Services and the FBI, Department of Justice, had jurisdiction, nor the state police or the state law enforcement brought any charges, which is really odd. I have compiled the cases of much milder cases, okay, where people have done this hoax letter, and even if they were determined to be hoax letters, and they have gotten minimum of 3 to 5 years jail time and minimum of $250,000 fine. This guy's witness to the custody, got out 4 hours later, no charges, no further investigation, and then we never got any other report through the media or through the government. What were those letters? Why were they sent? What was the detailed testing that was done? In fact, we had a person, researcher, call the FBI's spokesperson who was in charge of this case. Meaning, all the media people, when they want to get information on this case, They will be calling this woman. She has access to all the files, what's happening in the case, up to date with everything, and she will tell you, right? Now, this researcher asked this question, James. Who had the chain of custody, okay, to the FBI spokesperson? Meaning, who took those envelopes and sent it for detailed tests, whether they sent it or not, to the level 4 labs? Do you know what the answer was by this woman? And we have it on record, okay? Her answer was, we are not sure, we don't know. Well, the case is closed. Did you have the custody, you, the FBI, or not? She's refusing to answer. Now, what would be your reaction, James? You're calling the FBI, say, I'm a reporter, and I want to know who had the chain of custody. You collected the letters. Did it go to the state or went to the FBI? And this person, the spokesperson, tells you, we don't know. We are not sure. I mean, what would you tell this woman?
Well, I think at that point you realize that the FBI simply isn't actually letting you know what they know about this case. Obviously,
exactly.
They're keeping it back. And in the wake of the anthrax letters of last decade, you would expect that the FBI would be a little bit more attuned to these issues, or you would expect that they are actually better at covering them up and realize they can get away with them. This is fascinating, and the implications are huge, but perhaps we should bring in the current context of this as well, with the Oregon standoff and what is taking place with the investigation right now. So let me use that as an opportunity to bring Spiro on board with this investigation. Spiro Skouras, of course, producing video reports at his YouTube channel, and also soon to be the news desk, one of the people on the news desk at newsbud.com. So we will once again direct your attention to the newsbud.com Kickstarter so that you can help fund investigative journalism like this. And in the show notes for this episode, I will also throw in a link to his recent video on this, Obama set to settle score against Oregon constitutional sheriff. And in that, you go over the latest about this, what Sheriff Palmer is being investigated for, or how this investigation is taking place. Perhaps you can update us about that.
Well, that's right. There was the chief of police of John Day there, which is in Grant County, where Sheriff Palmer is the sheriff of Grant County. Him, the chief of police, as well as a 911 dispatcher, filed formal complaints. There was over a half a dozen formal complaints that were filed against Sheriff Palmer in some accusations and that have raised some concerns with his relationship with the protesters or the occupiers at the wildlife refuge there in Oregon. Now, of course, those men were on their way to John Day, which is in the neighboring county, Grant County, when that ambush was set and they were all taken into custody and LaVoy lost his life. At this point in time, they're requesting that the Department of Justice investigate Sheriff Palmer for his relationship with these guys. And what they stated, if the Justice Department finds any kind of wrongdoing on the sheriff's behalf, that they would remove his credentials that certify him to be a public servant, to be law enforcement. Now, since he is an elected official by the people there in that county, they can't remove him from his position, but they can try to remove his credentials that they gave him, which would force another election of a sheriff there, which is coming up. The regular election is coming up this November anyways, as it is. So,
now, from what I understand, the clearest sign that this is just a political maneuver and nothing to do with any wrongdoing on Palmer's part in particular is the fact that he wasn't even particularly close to the Oregon standoff protesters, certainly not as close as some of the others sheriffs involved in this, including Sheriff Dave Ward. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. Ward had met with the protesters there on multiple occasions, as well as sheriffs from other neighboring counties there as well. Had negotiations with them multiple times. Sheriff Palmer never actually met with the Bundys, as far as I know, but he did meet with a couple of the occupiers there, Ryan Payne and John Ritzheimer. They were at a restaurant, and the sheriff went in there. According to the sheriff, he didn't know who he was going to meet, and they were in there, and so he sat down and heard what they had to say, like any sensible person you think would do to hear what these men have to say. So it definitely does appear to be a political move, especially if you add up all the other events that had taken place prior, the gun grabbing agenda of this current administration, and then you have the constitutional sheriffs standing up and speaking out against that, and then being targeted by the letters, which is definitely reminds me of the anthrax case, all those letters that were sent out right after 9/11. They kind of hit you with a barrage of different distractionary stories and fear tactics. But then it's setting a very dangerous and scary precedent, as far as I'm concerned, to have the administration going after people who are standing up for the Constitution. I mean, who's it going to be next after they're going after the people, the patriots, the sheriffs, attorneys, lawyers, journalists, the public? I mean, it's...
So, okay, so we have this Second Amendment, vocal Second Amendment supporting sheriff who receives a letter that now they're saying may or may not have contained anything, but he actually went to hospital for it. The FBI says, what's a chain of custody when you ask them about it? And now he's being investigated for his supposed involvement with these Oregon standoff protesters, but he had really very little to do with them in particular. So clearly there is some political intimidation going on here. I guess the question is, what is the next step in regards to this investigation? Where do we take it from here, Sibel?
Well, we have this unfinished investigation, again, because we are limited by our resources. For example, the suspect that they took into custody for only a few hours, they released. Nobody in the media followed up. There is not a single picture of this guy. There is not a single interview. There was not a single follow-up after those 2 days of intense coverage to say, who was this guy? What is or what was his background? Why did he do it? And why they didn't bring charges and they quietly released him? Now, we did some digging and we found out that he was arrested just a few days before sending these letters, okay? Now, we don't know what happened when he was arrested. Again, this just starts going into the Boston Marathon bombing or into the anthrax. You know how many suspects they went through with the anthrax. They caused one of them suicide. So, and he may already have committed suicide because nobody knows where he is. He has an address showing in Eugene. We need to follow up and find out more and establish contact, find out what's going on. And also we are going to have an interview, Spiro and I, this evening with one of the, if not the top forensic expert and an FBI agent and an attorney and a PhD. I don't think there is anyone in the country who has this guy's credential. You know him, James, because you have interviewed him. It's Dr. Frederick Whitehurst, who served with the FBI for 15 years. He blew the whistle, and he's actually considered the grandfather of all FBI whistleblowers on FBI lab fraud cases. And intentional. We're not only talking about competence and incompetence. We are talking about intentional fudging of the lab results, etc. So he's going to be our guest. I'm going to be talking with Sheriff Palmer soon. I'm talking with some other sheriffs in Oregon, and we are going to basically pursue the story as much as we can with the limited resources. This case has already taken us into Utah. I have been to Boise, Idaho. I have traveled to John Day, which is about 2.5-3 hours drive here. We have gone to Portland several times to cover the court proceedings and trying to meet with some of the attorneys. By the way, one of the attorneys, the attorney for the most public figure in this whole protest incident is Ammon Bundy, his attorney. Now they're going after him. They're bringing this ethic charges against this guy, saying that he actually tried to recruit him and that it's not in line with public defender's office. And the kind of standards they are setting up there, which truly doesn't have any merits, if they were to apply those standards, okay, not selectively, every single ambulance chaser attorney in Oregon would be disbarred, okay? Because they are saying it's not ethical for them to go and approach saying, do you want to bring a case, right? Well, what do you think ambulance chasers do? And there are many, many ambulance chasers attorney. So this is just one example. And I really want to emphasize, it doesn't matter if it's a case from the right or from the liberal left, if it involves yellow people or purple people or black people, we would be treating these kinds of cover-ups with the same level of passion, drive, enthusiasm and the quest for the truth, okay? So I really don't care what the mindset of those individuals has been. I don't care. That's irrelevant. You know, a good analogy would be one of the things that have been really documented well, police departments, when there are serial killers on the loose, but if the victims are, let's say, prostitutes, they don't investigate. And it takes years and years for them to do the forensic things and make the connection because, hey, the victims in this case were some street-level prostitutes, right? But we all say, as the public, we say, that's so wrong. The life is life. So whether it's a white kid who has been murdered or black kid, whether it's the prostitutes, victims of serial killing, or, I don't know, some militia group people, you have to do the job, whether you're the police department or the courts. You know, justice was supposed to be blind. Well, we are seeing it over and over. Of course, I don't have to say this to your audience. Most of them are so well informed. And that's what we want to do it as journalists. And we don't see anyone else doing it. And for this, we need resources. You know what I would like to do, James? I would like to bring in Bill Conroy, journalist who has 30 years experience covering this, because some of these cases goes over my head because I haven't been an investigative journalist. But guess what? Currently, Bill Conroy has to work full time, okay? He cannot afford to spend even 5 hours a week chasing the story. He can't get on the plane and go and interview some of these people who are in a different state. But if we had the resources, if we had Bill Conroy full time, if we were to have Spiro full time and have this very frugal travel budget set, I mean, we would be getting to the bottom of some of these cases and issues within a matter of days or weeks. But if we were to do it as a singular blogs, or if it's something that as much as we can manage, try to implement it, well, I don't know if we will ever get any answer and how long it would take to even find out whether we have any answers or not. And this is the kind of investigative journalism we want to do. And it doesn't matter what the case. There are so many cover-ups, so many issues, so many cases that the media is not touching. And we need the people. We need the people to say, we can do something about it. Whether it's $1, whether it's 50 cents, whether it's $100, it's so easy. It doesn't take millions of people. It does not take millions of people. And it's doable. Let's prove that we can stand up. We can put the resources and put them all out of business, because we can.
Well, certainly on the note of the importance of investigative journalism and the legwork that's involved with it, perhaps, again, we should turn to Spiro Skouras and the work that you will be doing, hopefully, for newsbud.com. Tell us a little bit about your work, how you got into it, and why you're excited about Newsbud.
Well, I mean, it's always been a passion of mine, truth, that is, and it's often hard to find. I mean, you have to dig for it a lot yourself or come across channels or people such as yourselves, and there's many others out there. And the lack of resources, you know, when we're all divided, I mean, we're not as powerful, obviously, or resourceful when we kind of band together kind of thing. So that's what's exciting about Newsbud to me, is having a solid team that has our back, that everyone plays their own role, and it could be a very successful operation that I'm excited to be a part of. As Sabelle had mentioned earlier, we did do some traveling, and I would like to continue to do that. Being single and no kids or anything like that, I have that ability to do the traveling, to go on the spot, get the interviews, get the footage, whatever it takes. I started my channel recently. It's not even been a year yet at this point in time, but I finally had to step up and just put myself out there, because for a long time, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to put my name out there, my face, or anything like that, because it's not about me, first of all. But there's that level of intimidation, and people are afraid that they'll be targeted if they don't say anything. But the thing is we're already being targeted anyways. So now the time is now. We got to step up and do something about all this.
Well, your story sounds like mine. I never wanted to or imagined I would be putting myself up on screen and be having a website. But if we don't do it, who is going to, and when, and under what circumstances? It doesn't get any better if people don't stand up. So I'm glad to see more and more people doing so. I'm glad to see your work contributing to this cause as well. Again, people can check out your YouTube channel for the examples of your previous work that will be linked up in the show notes. And we will once again direct people to the newsbud.com Kickstarter. If you value independent alternative media plus investigative reporting, which is a very rare thing, actually, when you look at it. There's a lot of alternative media, but not a lot of investigative reporting from the alternative media, doing the legwork, going to court proceedings, interviewing witnesses, traveling to meet whistleblowers and collect information. This is important work, and it's not being done by very many people. If you value this type of work, please do consider pledging to the Kickstarter campaign. Once again, at newsbud.com, you can find the details there. It's an all-or-nothing campaign, so if the pledges are reached by April 14th, 2016, newsbud.com will go ahead, and you'll see a lot more reporting like this in the near future, with Bill Conroy and Pepe Escobar and Peter B. Collins and Spiro and Sabel and many other people involved in it besides. So we will put the link there in the show notes for this conversation, and people can continue to keep track of what's going on with this particular investigation, I'm assuming, at boilingfrogspost.com. So please do keep going there for more information on this story. Sabel, Spiro, I think we're going to leave it there for today, but thank you very much for the work you've been doing on this story. It's very important, and I don't see a lot of people covering it.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.